Welcome to another sparkling edition of On The Record, the Two Mics podcast that you can get twice a week.
That's right.
From Audio Boom, from all sorts of other places around the podcast community, and of course now available on Spotify.
That's right. Now then, MG, when you want to know what's going on in the world of politics and finance, where do you turn?
Well, there's only one place to turn, Porky, and that is, of course, first off, The Economist.
The Economist, that's absolutely right. It's full of information, it's full of facts, it's full of the sort of information that can keep you ahead of the pack.
Very much,
of the rest.
Very much at the top of the game. And of
what caught your eye in this week's...
Well, do you know, this week, the big story for me all over the world, and also particularly in America, but it affects everywhere else as well, is the shutdown, the government shutdown. Donald Trump is getting less and less popular with every week that goes by, and with every week that some of his people that work for the government aren't getting paid.
Yes.
You know, air traffic controllers being made to work and all of that.
That's some
great analysis in The Economist on it. Pages and pages of analysis, news, great interviews, fantastic stuff.
Absolutely. An extraordinary situation, but explained beautifully in The Economist.
Yeah.
My eye caught the piece on betting on China's bad debts, okay?
Oh, yes.
Because China, of course, if China sneezes, the world now coughs,
very good.
Doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know,
or even catches a cold.
Catches a cold all the way around the globe. Mm. And we've already seen in some of the motoring companies in this country, Land Rover Jaguar, for instance, is one, blaming a turn down in number of sales in China for a recession here. They having to lay some workers off. All that, again, is explained in great detail. My advice to all of you out there would be, don't be economical with the facts, read The Economist.
For your free print copy of The Economist, just text the word record, that's R-E-C-O-R-D, to 78070. That's text the word record, R-E-C-O-R-D, to 78070. And get your free print copy of The Economist.
Now, we've got much to do, Porky.
We certainly have.
And I thought, since we are very nearly coming around to the new month, it's time for another Ask Porky.
Well, it certainly is,
and
because...
we've got lots of questions for you.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant, because, you know, I am a man who leads my flock. I'm here to help. I want to change people's lives if I can. I have a wealth of experience of lifestyle and life experiences.
Yes.
And I want to pass all that on.
Okay. Well, let's start off with the first question from Mark, who sent this in on our Twitter.
Right.
Porky, who is the most beautiful of the famous women you have met in your years of working?
The most beautiful woman that I've ever met... I can remember telling somebody who it was, but I can't remember who it was now.
What do you mean you can't remember who it was?
Well, I've met lots of beautiful women. Do you know one time, by the way, you know, you won't believe this, you know our old colleague Tim Miles, from the Daily Mail?
Yeah.
And he and I worked in a lot of places together. He was in America for a short period, about 6 months or something like that.
Well,
you know,
maybe
what I mean?
Longer, actually, because he ended up moving to Florida, didn't he, with Mrs...
But I meant actually working with us in New York City.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Came over on a three-month stipend or something, and
something
Wendy,
like
his wife, came with him.
That's right.
But he once told me, believe it or not, that...
Was that when she was at Elle magazine?
No, she was editing the News of the World Sunday magazine in this country, and when Tim got a break on the Daily Mail to go and fill in for 3 months in New York, she did a deal with the Murgut organisation to go over and work in their bureau there.
Okay.
And that's what she did.
Yeah. Okay, right.
But no, point of the story is, I remember having a drink with him one time in the Harrow, probably, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And Tim used to smoke about like 60 fags a day.
Yeah.
And you could smoke inside pubs in those days. And in between cigarettes, he told me that 2 days earlier, he'd interviewed Edwina Curry.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, oh, right, okay. And I don't think the story had come out by then that Edwina Curry was legging over with John Major.
John Major,
I don't think that didn't come out until years later.
While he was Prime Minister, as well.
No, he wasn't, actually. It happened while they were both backbench MPs.
Okay.
And then when he became Prime Minister, Edwina Curry assumed, you know, to keep her quiet, she'd get a cabinet or a junior cabinet post, you know, like a sort of, you know...
Did she not, though? Because was she not involved in the Salmonella eggs problem?
Eventually, but on the initial appointments, you know, she was very upset that as they'd both gone to... as she'd come out of Oxford University and they'd started in Parliament together, and then John Major had been having his... not his evil way, but his lustful way with her.
Indeed.
Even though she was a married woman at the time, she thought, well, to shut me up, he'll probably give me some sort of junior cabinet post.
Right.
You know, he didn't.
Right.
And she was very upset. But Tim Miles had met her to talk to her about something. I think this was after the Salmonella. And he said, you know what, Mike? He said, she's the sexiest woman I've ever met.
Really?
I said, who? He said, Edwina Curry.
Really?
I said, what do you mean? I said, she's an average middle-aged woman. Mm. I said, you know, bright, obviously, went to Oxford and all that, but... married to some bloke called Ray or something like that.
Uh-huh.
He said, no, no, something about her. He said, oh, you know, I really could have got hold of her, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Perhaps I shouldn't say that.
Maybe you shouldn't. A bit late now, though. You've
I'm sure Tim was talking metaphorically, obviously, because he's married to the lovely Wendy, you know. But, he said you're a very sexy woman. And years later, I don't know if you remember, I was coming back from an England game at Wembley.
Oh, yeah.
And she was on the tube, not coming from Wembley, but you know when you come down from Wembley, then you hit the underground, and I had to get to Victoria.
Yeah.
And she was on the second tube, and she was standing, and nobody would get up and give her a seat. And I got up and I probably had a few drinks, and berated. I said, this woman, you know, this is Edwina Curry, she's a fine woman, a woman of dignity, former cabinet minister. She did, actually. She came on the show the next morning.
Really?
I don't know whether it was you or me who talked to her, maybe Andy Townsend or something. But anyway, the most beautiful woman that I've ever met.
I hope you're not going to say Edwina Curry.
No, it's not Edwina Curry. It's either Joan Collins, right, who attended Nick Lloyd's 50th birthday party.
Yeah, I've seen the fake picture.
No, you haven't seen the fake picture. You've seen
the
real picture,
I've seen the fake front page.
Or the other most beautiful woman I've ever met could be. I went to St. Lucia on a facility trip, stayed at a hotel called the Anschastne near the Pitons, and the housekeeper woman was the girlfriend of the bloke who ran the scuba diving school.
Right.
And she was from Holland, and she was very, very, very beautiful.
Well, sorry, she's not famous, though.
Well, did she say famous?
No, it says famous.
I see, most beautiful famous
it's not
woman.
Just some floozy that you picked up somewhere.
Yeah.
Or some bird on a holiday.
It's got to
be somebody famous.
It's got to be Joan Collins, I suppose, then. Mm. Beautiful woman. And if I could mention one other, Jessie J. Remember Jessie J?
Jessie J.
She's a singer. She had a couple of number
the
one.
Shaved her head.
That's right.
It's all about the money.
I met her in the boardroom at Spurs when Everton were playing Spurs.
Oh, yeah.
Very beautiful woman.
She shaved her head at that point.
She had. She'd just done it to raise money for charity.
Right.
But very beautiful woman.
You might say with a shaved head?
Yeah, beautiful woman.
Really?
Beautiful woman, yeah.
How extraordinary.
I also met, the mad woman, nothing compares.
Sinead O'Connor.
After she shaved her head.
Right.
She's beautiful.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever met a woman who wasn't beautiful?
Yes,
you
lots of ugly women.
That out.
I met a lot of ugly women, but I'm not going to name
a lot of ugly women.
I'm not going to name you. Yeah.
All right, Mark says this, as a different Mark, actually. As an award-winning journalist and broadcaster, seeker of truth and justice, medical miracle, and Butlin's boxing champion, why are your football predictions so crap?
No, my football predictions aren't crap. The problem is, what's this guy's name? Mark.
Mark.
Mark, people don't stick their head above the parapet like I do. Mm. People don't go out on a limb. People are not prepared to stake their claim. I am, okay? Now, it's all very well saying, oh, you get most of them wrong. I don't. I get more than half of them right.
Really? More than half?
I get more than half of them right.
Are you sure?
Absolutely certain I get more than half of them right.
All right.
I can tell you that for sure. I'm telling you. And the idea that, there's a Porky Jinx, a Porky Curse, because every time I make a prediction. I mean, the other night, I predicted Spurs to win, a couple of weeks ago now, Spurs to win the Caribou semi-final against Chelsea on penalties.
Yeah.
I predicted them to win.
Yeah.
After two penalties, and remember, 10 penalties are taken, I realised it wasn't going Spurs' way, so I predicted Chelsea to win.
What do you make of the Gareth Southgate curse? The curse of the England penalty takers.
Well, that's not...
Because now they've missed two penalties.
Yeah, they have,
Both from England players.
Yeah, that's
right. Who scored penalties.
That's right.
In the penalty shootout in the World Cup.
Eric Dier being one of them.
Yeah.
And the other one, I think, is Trippier. That's right, absolutely,
Missed the goal altogether.
Missed the goal altogether. Didn't even shave the post. Shocking.
Shave the post?
Yeah. Sometimes if you just hit the post, it goes
the
wrong way.
It's just that we were just talking about people shaving
their
head.
I see.
It's
like a shaving thing going on.
Here's one from Joe. Is it acceptable to eat pancakes with a main course, for example, beef stew?
Well, it depends what sort of pancake you're talking about, right? Now, on Shrove Tuesday, I love pancakes, and my mum used to cook them, and she would pour all that bubbling fat into the pan, and it would cook up. And then we would put lemon and sugar, and roll them up and eat them. Beautiful.
That's
I can't do it these days.
That's like a crepe.
Can't do it these days, but yeah, like a crepe.
They do that on the streets of Paris.
Do they do that?
Yeah, there's a guy there, right?
Yeah.
It's like a hot dog truck type thing.
But it's the crepe.
But he does crepes, right?
Okay.
And they'll do one with lemon and sugar.
Yes, yes.
And the other one they'll do with Nutella.
Oh, right, okay. Ooh, don't like Nutella much,
to be honest.
No.
Nutella,
okay. However, I can't do that these days because one of the illnesses that Mark did not mention is the diabetes, of course, and I can't eat sugar. Well, I have kind of cured it, but you'll bring it back if you start indulging in loads of sugar again, you see.
Okay.
So, the sort of pancake you might be talking about is the Chinese duck.
Yes.
And
crispy duck.
The waiter comes in and cuts it up.
It's crispy duck.
And then you get like what's the sauce? Is it duck sauce?
Hoisin.
Plum sauce.
Or hoisin, isn't it?
Hoisin, plum sauce. Yeah. And then, of course, the lovely cool green stuff.
Yeah.
Which is
cucumber.
Cucumber.
Also a little bit of spring onion, usually.
Bit of spring onion. Yeah. I love all that. And, yeah. In fact,
so
it's making
savory.
Me hungry to go for
that's
one
savory,
right now.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's savoury. So that's the sort of pancake I like.
Okay. Mm. And what about, of course, when you go to America and you have breakfast and they give you... You know, a stack of silver dollar pancakes with bacon.
I was in the...
And maple syrup. I've never been keen on that.
I was in the Copley Plaza once in Boston, doing a story there about Angela Rippon, who had taken, you know, a top job on a local TV station.
Oh, yeah.
The English Limey, they called it, you know. I remember, you know, being slightly puzzled by the menu, because a massive menu for breakfast. So I ordered some bacon... And anyway, I ended up with everything. Bacon, sausage, fried potatoes, blueberries, but a stack of pancakes, six high, maple syrup.
I can't eat that for breakfast.
No. And again, terribly sugary.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Mm. Arthur says, since you've both been pictured on the steps of St. George's Hall outside Liverpool Lime Street, what is your favourite building in the UK?
My favourite building in the UK, that's a very good question. Most people would say the Houses of Parliament as you approach it across Westminster Bridge, right? It is a magnificent fusillade, you know? It really is. A fusillade. Yes, it really is, okay. That's what,
so
you,
that's
call
what you call it.
An assault on your eyes,
is
you know
right?
what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. However, my favourite building in this country, and I'm sorry that this is very specific, has to be Goodison Park.
Oh, for God's sake.
Well, now I know that
Even
sounds
Everton
corny.
Even don't like it.
I know it sounds corny, but as you get in a taxi outside Lime Street and then you drive up Scotland Road, through Everton Valley, up onto the Cemetery Road, and as you come towards Goodison, our massive stand, which was once the biggest stand in the world, it's three tiers, and obviously it needs replacing now, has got Welcome to Everton Football Club on the side, and that does make my heart dance, honest to God, when I see it.
Does it?
However, there are an awful lot of great buildings in this country. Blenheim Palace, I think, is beautiful.
Yes.
I really love Blenheim Palace. I love the Houses of Parliament. I quite like Buckingham Palace, to be honest, although you only see one side of it when you drive past. So I'm going to have to stick with...
traditionalist, though. You're not going for one of the modern ones.
No, although I like the Shard. Uh-huh. And the Shard's a brilliant building. And I don't like the walkie-talkie in those. I just think they're very odd buildings. St. Paul's Cathedral, most beautiful building, but I'm going to stick with Goodison.
Okay, which takes us on to the next question from AD, who says, what is the point of Everton Football Club?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question because A, it's too specific. B, a lot of people just don't get sort of football in Everton. All I can say is when you have a passion for something, some people have a passion for art, some people have a passion for exercise or for jogging or something like that. You know how it grips you, and when it grips you, you just have to try and handle it.
Martin says this, if you're considering retiring to the northeast of England, what's your opinion on how Mike Ashley is running Newcastle United, and will he endear himself to the locals by showing support for or against Mike Ashley? So he's asking you whether you support Mike Ashley.
Yes, I understand that. If I went to the northeast of England and I want to live in a place called Tynemouth, I saw a beautiful picture last week of a storm in Tynemouth Bay.
You've got a great nine-hole golf course there.
Tynemouth, Oh, right, OK.
Right on the shore.
And affected by the wind, obviously, and the conditions and the spray and all that kind of stuff. And they took the picture on one side of Tynemouth Bay and it wrapped round. And Whitley Bay would have been behind the photographer where you and I have
Whitley
done a live
Beer.
Show. You know, Whitley Bay.
Where that terrible hotel is.
Yeah, terrible hotel in Waiai, you know, he lives there. And all that kind of stuff, right. My view of the Mike Ashley situation is be careful what you wish for. Yeah. Because Mike Ashley is owed £145 million by Newcastle United. A new owner comes in, suddenly calls in the debt and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I don't know. All I know is Newcastle's a mighty football club. They haven't won anything for, like, so long. 1969, UEFA Fairs Cup, before that, FA Cups in the 50s. And it's a mighty club, and there are mighty people, the Geordies. I'd like to be part of them, but, of course, I'll never stop supporting Everton. If I went to that part of the world, I would support a team called Blyth Spartans. Very famous non-league club.
That's where Alan Shearer started, isn't it?
No, he started at the Wallsend Boys Club.
Oh, right, OK.
Yeah.
I seem to remember he was connected in some way to Blyth Spartans when they played in a cup recently. went and addressed them in the dressing room.
Well, he could have done, yeah. From the northeast.
I presumed he had some kind
from
of
the northeast, yeah. Yeah.
One from Joseph. Porky, yeah. If you had to choose a city in the UK to be the new capital city of the United Kingdom, which one would it be and why?
Well, there's no other city than London. London's one of the most famous cities in the world. Mm. One of the most prosperous, one of the most diverse, one of the most business-centred countries, despite the efforts of the left-wing nutters who want to sort of close it down, and all those wankers who put these bicycle lanes in everywhere. Somebody told me the other day, by the way, a taxi driver who'd been up to Highbury Corner recently. You know that roundabout at Highbury Corner,
yeah.
And the Hen and Chickens
there.
That's down now to one traffic lane and two cycle lanes all
really?
The way. Yeah, he said you can wait 20 minutes even to get on the roundabout.
That's
ridiculous. And so London for me the best. New York, of course. Brilliant city overseas. In this country, I can't see how you could replace London with any other city. But if you're asking me, where would I like to stay? You know,
well, he's asking you which other city could you make the capital. Well, you're saying there isn't one.
No, you couldn't. You simply couldn't unless you do what a lot of countries do, like the United States of America, and they don't make their most vibrant city the capital. They make it a much smaller city. If I had to nominate a smaller city to be the capital of this country and regionally get it into being, that city would be Leeds.
Leeds?
Leeds.
Okay. One from Philip on Facebook. Hi, guys. He says, we're flying to Australia in March for just 48 hours for our niece's wedding. One spare day to sightsee. We're going to Sydney. Have you been there? And where would you recommend going for a very short visit? A restaurant or a bar or sightseeing? That's Phil in Nottingham.
Well, Phil, let me tell you this. I read a feature in a Sunday review, you know, maybe a week ago, a couple of weeks ago, the world's top 10 hotels. One of them was the Hyatt on the Rocks on Sydney
Harbour.
You've
stayed there, haven't you?
I have stayed there. And your window, you know, your curtains open in the morning.
Isn't that where you had to get Frank Thorne carried out of?
Yes, I did, yeah. I had to get Frank Thorne carried out of there. You got too drunk after drinking two bottles of red wine. And to answer your question about where to dine, the thing about Sydney is it's like London and New York. The tastes for restaurants change all the time.
Yeah.
New ones open and closing. But there's a great English pub a walk away from the Rocks called the Lord Nelson. And they do most beautiful fish and chips. You know, they pride themselves on it, yeah.
I think they eat a different kind of fish down there, don't they?
It's,
they don't have
it's called
no John Dory and all that.
It's called lightly dusted bursar or something, is it?
Bursar
is a fish or something like, in the South Pacific, you know. Yeah. But nevertheless, it's very nice. So, and another thing, by the way, I saw recently when I was reading my journals is that Qantas are doing a sale and a push to get people to Australia.
Uh-huh.
4,120 business class return.
4,120. Well, that's not cheap. That's,
well, yeah, but it's not expensive. I think for a 24-hour flight there, 24-hour flight back, with a stopover in somewhere like, you know, Abu Dhabi or Singapore.
To go there for 48 hours if you go and take 24 hours to get there and 24 hours to get back.
Oh, no, I didn't say you'd be there 48 hours. You'd be 48 hours in the air.
No, but he's going for 48 hours.
Oh, he's going 48 hours.
He's only going there for 48
hours. Oh, I see, yeah,
it
well.
It's too far to go for
No, I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't go to Australia for 48 hours. No. That seemed like a mad, mad trip. Mm. I would say think again.
You're going to be suffering for weeks
yeah,
after that.
Yeah.
Here's one from Paul.
Yeah.
My question is, between Porky and Robbie Fowler, who owns and rents out the most properties?
Robbie Fowler, without a shadow of a doubt. Saw Robbie Fowler talking recently to Gary Neville about their battles between Manchester United and Liverpool and all that. Robbie Fowler owns something like, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands, of properties.
Yeah.
Bought some.
He owns like entire blocks of flats, doesn't he?
Well, entire streets, apparently, in the northwest of England. We all live in a Robbie Fowler house.
Is that the song?
A Robbie Fowler house.
Yeah.
A Robbie Fowler house, okay? And he's grown up over the years, Robbie. When I first went to watch him, he was doing stupid things like crawling on his hands and knees across the white line and
pretending to snort
cocaine.
Well,
because
he wasn't
pretending,
I don't think, was he?
Yes, he was pretending because the rumours going around that, you know, he was a cocaine user, which, of course, he never has been.
Well, no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He's a good man, though. We've met him.
Top man.
One from Rick says, Porky, if we see the world in colour, dogs see it in black and white, and bats basically through maps they create in their heads with sound, what does the world really look like? How can we be sure our interpretation is the real one? It's a bit philosophical, that.
It is a bit philosophical, but you interpret the world in whichever way you see it.
Yeah.
There is good and bad and indifferent, okay? I tend to go for the good as often as I can. Indifferent bores me, bad I avoid. It's quite as simple as that. And the other thing is, you wake up each day, either the chemistry in your body is working or it's not. You therefore have a positive or a negative view on the day. If I have a negative view, there are certain things I will do that day, i.e. get onto people who've been annoying me and letting me down and turning me over and give them a fucking hard time, OK? That is a day when I will do it.
For no good reason.
Well, just because I've been storing it up for a day like that to do it for them. On a good day, I will go out and I will be nice to people, often buy them drinks in pubs, ring somebody up and say, do you want to come for lunch, pay for the big lunch, you know?
Would you say that's a 50-50, the good and bad?
No, it's normally, I'd say 75 bad, 75% bad, 25% good.
That doesn't sound like it's something to boast about.
I'm not boasting, I'm telling you how I run my life, man, and how the world works, okay?
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here we are. Yeah. More questions to come, Porky. We're halfway through this particular podcast, but lots more questions still coming in. First one up from Richie, food-related question.
Yeah.
Do you think I should have poached or scrambled eggs on toast?
Richie, I couldn't give a monkey's whether you have...
Well, he's looking for a bit of advice.
Yeah, but listen, everybody knows now, has been listening to me for a number of years, I've never eaten an egg.
Well, you have.
I have never eaten
an
egg.
I've cooked you eggs.
No, bollocks. You have not cooked me eggs.
There is
rubbish.
Video evidence of me making you a frittata in the MG kitchen.
If I had a mouthful of frittata and had egg in it, look, I've had an egg custard occasionally. Yeah. That's got egg in it. You know what I mean? It's a cake. But I cannot eat egg in its own original form. So what did you say? Scrambled or what? Poached?
Scrambled or, I think you said poached.
Yeah. So I can't eat egg anyway. I can't eat an egg sandwich. I've tried to eat egg sandwiches. When I was a kid, my sisters used to say, now, come on, eat this egg sandwich. And we'd sit in the kitchen, they'd hand it to me, I would take a bout, and then I'd be violently ill.
Really?
There's something wrong with about me and eggs. So I would never eat the egg sandwich. I'd never eat scrambled egg. And yet, I'm so envious if I'm in a hotel, right, and I've stayed overnight, I come down, and if I see somebody with a plate of bacon and eggs, with a bit of mushroom on the side and black pudding and all that, I'm so envious the minute they put their knife into a sunny side up egg and the yellow yolk spills out. Yeah. It looks so lovely.
It does.
And smells so nice, but I simply can't taste it. So I can't give you any advice on that, pal. I can give you advice on many, many things. You know, your love life, what to drink, how to pursue your career, what you should invest in. But I can't advise you on eggs, full stop.
All right. Michael says, if you could change one rule in the game of football, what would it be?
If I could change one rule in the game of football, it would be to extend the size of the pitch. Now, of course it would be. At the moment, it's a maximum of 120 yards long, okay? Right. And I think width-wise is 90.
Some pitches are wider than others, aren't they?
Of course they are, because managers can, you know, have the pitches moved in and out depending on what sort of team they're playing, okay?
Yeah, but shouldn't that be a more specific measurement?
No. There's a longest and shortest length and width for a football pitch, okay? Yeah. Now, I would extend it because, you see, I'm smarter than the average bear. I've already tried to get the world of football interested in a campaign to raise the bar.
Yeah.
That is still an ongoing campaign.
You don't really want to do that now, this season, with Everton playing the way they are, though. Because if you raise the bar, poor old Jason Pickford would let even more goals in.
Well, the problem is Everton can't defend set pieces under any form. And it's disgraceful that we can't find defenders who can do
that.
It
is hopeless, isn't it?
It is hopeless, yeah.
It's the one thing you should be able to do.
It is.
In any football team.
But people don't understand, you see, that men are getting bigger. Not to keep rattling on about the stats, but when the rules were written in 1863, a man was average height of about 5'4", average height of a man now about 5'9", 5'10". That means that the length and stride of a man is longer because he's, you know, footballers are over 6 foot mostly. And that means that they can run over short distances much, much quicker than they used to. So you're going to have to, Everton, for instance, my club, are thinking of building a new stadium. Mm. We get the planning permission, we'll do it. It'll be at Bramley Moor Dock. I would build it with enough space internally to have the pitch extended by 5 or 6 feet in length, or maybe even 3 or 4 yards in length, 12 feet, and 2 yards wide. I really would. I've thought this out, and I'm ahead of the ball on this one.
Really? Okay. Mm. Well, let's see if they take your advice. Saul says, Porky, how's your house tidying going? Have you found any gems for the homeless?
Well, I'm not looking for gems for the homeless, but I have decided on a decluttering operation because I realise that when one has lived as long as I have and had such an interesting life and an active life, you do accumulate things. I think I've told you before, Mark, I've got a box somewhere at home that's got all the memorabilia, or what do you call it? Not memorabilia.
Yeah, it's memorabilia.
Yeah, memorabilia from the...
Souvenirs.
Yeah, souvenirs from the Clinton campaign, all those badges, you know, vote Clinton and all that. But I remember going to a shop in Washington, which specialised in this, and I got badges from, like, the Barry Goldwater era. Mm. from the John F. Kennedy era and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it's great stuff. Now, this is an interesting point you're making. You can't hold on to that all your life. And for instance, I remember recently Elton John had a sale of his stage clothes, had a sale of his furniture, and you think to yourself, why would you do that when a man's got so many millions? He's got over 150 million quid. Mm. And the answer is he's not looking for money, but he didn't want to throw it away.
Right.
He wanted somebody else to enjoy it, okay? I think Rod might have done the same, Sir Roderick Stewart, our friend. I think he might have done the same. And certainly, over the years, you know, people have just... In America, used to call it garage sales, didn't we?
Right.
I remember Ross Mark, our old pal who was the political guy.
In Washington.
Yeah, he went gaga in the end, Ross, I'm afraid. He just drank
Kiwi,
too much.
He was a Kiwi, I think, wasn't he?
He was an Aussie. He was an Aussie, yeah. And he went a bit gaga at the end.
What do you mean gaga?
Well, he used to drink a lot and get a bit senile in the Washington Press Club when he would start...
I think he'd get a bit senile. I mean, I think you're either senile or you're not.
No, he'd start talking about all the women he'd been shagging over the years and all this kind of
stuff.
That's not good. And, no, it was quite interesting, actually, because every time there was a new barmaid there, Ross would give her the eye. But Ross had got quite big and heavy.
Didn't he have funny eyes?
In his 60s. I'm not sure,
didn't he have,
really.
Like, one eye that went the
wrong
way?
Well, I think...
My father would have described him as wall-eyed.
Wall-eyed?
Wall-eyed, yeah. Well, like sort of Marty Feldman.
I know, but I think his eyes started to shift a bit, the amount he had to drink. But Ross would always tell us what a great woman's man he was.
Really?
And he'd spend, honestly, I'm not joking, 2 or 4 hours saying, the only girl for me is... I can't remember his girlfriend's name now. It was something like...
I didn't really know him terribly well.
I knew him because I lived in Washington for a while. You know, I used to pay him to do work for the Daily Express that I didn't want to do.
That's why I used to hang out with him.
Yeah. I used to pay him $200 or $300 a week and get him to write stuff and send it to the Express under my name.
In your name?
Yeah.
That's a shocking admission.
No, it's not.
This is a second only to your admission the other day, apparently. I'm told that you admitted on the radio that you used to fill your expenses.
No, I've never filled my expenses. No.
Apparently.
A bit of creative accounting is all right.
You better tell Porky to stop confessing to... defrauding.
So who said that?
I was getting tweets.
Rubbish.
I was. From HMRC. HMRC are interested.
Ross didn't know anything to do. He had a bit of a pension from the Express. I said, look, Ross, here, we'll meet every Wednesday for lunch. I'll give you $300 in the hand. Because I was in so much money, not paying any tax. You know, it didn't matter. And Ross would. I said, file a couple of stories on Thursday and Friday, you know, in my name.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So London were really impressed at the depth of knowledge of my stories from the American capital, Washington. But he had a girlfriend with an exotic name, something like Jolene or something.
Oh, really?
You know, something like that. Or
Jolene?
Yeah, honestly.
It's not very exotic.
It was amazing. and she was... She was a worker inside the Democratic Party, so we got inside info, so that was great, because he'd use that to file the stories to the Express in London, you know. Oh, was it Jolene or Vailene or something like that? Strange
Eileen.
Name. Definitely wasn't Eileen. I've known a few Eileens in my time. Definitely wasn't
there.
I knew an Aileen as once.
I remember the
as well.
Aileen.
Aileen was the Scots girl.
Wasn't she?
A terrible piss artist, yeah. Yeah. She used to say that the stress of her mother having... What's that disease that was never really a disease? You know, the yuppie flu or something.
ME.
Yeah. Oh, my mum's got ME and that's such a strain, you know. I can only relieve the strain.
Did she not come to my sister's old flat, which I was living in at the time?
Yeah.
When I first moved back to London.
Right.
And you and her came, I'm sure.
I don't think so.
Up there for drinks.
Yeah, I don't think I would have done.
No, you did.
Did I?
Yeah,
maybe.
Because I remember the scene. You were dancing around.
Oh, really?
You were doing a sort of a Highland jig of
something. Oh, were we? Oh, yeah.
And somehow she let go of you and clattered into the fucking wall.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Because, you know, you were going round and round really fast.
Yeah.
Very drunk.
Yeah, she had very long legs, actually.
Did she?
But anyway, so either Jolene or Vailene, whatever her name was, you know, the more pissed Ross used to get, used to say, I'll never be... I'll never be a one in my life who can tempt me like that barmaid. And this barmaid be gorgeous, you know, probably in her late 20s or something, you know, buxom lady all that, you know, flashing her eyes, long hair. Nah, nobody will ever turn me from Jolene or Vailene or whatever her name was. And then Vailene would turn up and she was, I'm not joking, 10-ton Tessie would have been her little mate, honest to God.
That's
you know what
not
I mean?
Very nice.
No, it's not very nice.
Very
but,
unchivalrous.
No, but don't worry, because Ross is dead.
Well, she might not be.
I think she probably will be.
She might not be.
Well, she's probably
eaten herself to death.
She probably is. I haven't got her right name anyway, so it doesn't matter. And and she's a huge woman, very nice woman,
yeah,
lovely
nice,
woman.
Yeah.
She, funny enough,
lovely
they,
woman.
They lived in.
I did not have sex with that woman.
No, no, oh, I'll tell you how big she was. They lived in an apartment block, obviously in Washington. Yeah, you know, and Ross lived there for years. And I went around there once in the lobby of this apartment block, and it was all tiled floors. Yeah. It wasn't a modern block; right. it was an old block, okay. You know. Yeah, in the fucking lobby, there was a grandfather clock, yeah. Right? And I went there one time. Fucking grandfather clock had disappeared, right. And I said, "What up, Ross?" He said, "Oh, you know, unfortunately, you know, yeah, well, unfortunately, Valine and I went and had a few drinks the other night. We came in, Valine tripped and fell into the grandfather clock. The fucking grandfather clock splintered into a million pieces, demolished, because Valine was bigger than the grandfather clock."
Dear God. Oh, God, that's very good. All right, here's one from Kirk.
Yeah.
What were the recent developments with 200 workers missing in Brumadinho due to the iron ore situation?
Yeah.
I presume that's the... You're talking about the Brazilian mud slide.
Is it the Brazilian mud slide?
Is that where the iron ore was?
Most iron ore comes from Australia. So the answer to that question is, I don't know, and I don't really care, to be honest. I do care about missing workers, but I don't know enough to be able to tell you.
Oh, okay. Here's one from Kyle.
Yeah.
He says, I'm currently on holiday in Cairns, Australia.
Right.
There's warning signs on the streets for crocs. What would Porky do if met by a croc?
Well, you'd think back to Crocodile Dundee, wouldn't you? By the way, I'll tell you something very interesting. Crocodile Dundee, of course, is a man who leapt onto the back of crocs, didn't he, to save his girlfriend, Linda Kowalski, from being eaten by a croc. Do you remember?
I do remember that.
Yeah, yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
That
was
the second one, I think, wasn't it?
No, it was the first one.
Was it the first,
first one?
First one
when they were out in the bush, don't you remember?
Yeah.
And she went down to a freshwater pool, looked at her face in the water, it was like a mirror, and then the croc snapped up and grabbed the chain around her neck and was trying to drag her under.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, Crocodile jumped on her back with his knife and wrestled with the croc, you know. But tell you the interesting thing is that did you know that for that Crocodile Dundee film, which was financed by American money, the expression that came out of that was, chuck a few more shrimps on the barbie.
Yeah, but he never said that in the film, though.
Well, yeah, but do you know what happened?
I remember the advert.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
What happened was that the word shrimps was never known in Australia.
Huh.
It was prawns.
Right.
Throw a few more prawns on the barbie.
Right. Okay.
But in America, they don't have prawns.
Yeah, maybe not.
They only have shrimps, you see what I mean? You know when you go to, like, I used to go to a restaurant with Janie called Pier 90?
Yeah.
Remember? And used to go in these booths. They served these massive shrimp cocktails.
Yeah.
You know,
the really big shrimp.
The big shrimps which hung over the edge of the bowl, the glass bowl, and they don't have prawns, so they had to change it to shrimps, and that's corrupted the Australian language.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whereas in this country, we regard prawns as quite small.
Of course we do. Tiny, tiny, that's right, yeah.
Which is unusual, isn't it? Because you call somebody a shrimp, it usually means they're small.
That's right, yeah, you little shrimp.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how about this from Matt? Is the FMP search all but over, or do you always keep one eye open for a potential old glampus?
Well, I'm still in demand. That's the point. Oh, yeah. And if you're in demand, you have to handle the demand. That's what you have to do.
Uh-huh.
No way in the world would I want to be rejective to a woman who had designs on me.
Uh-huh.
But I would have to weigh it up. Because the point is, at my stage of life now, there are many, many things to do. And just as Rudolf Valentino once said, so little time, so many women. You know what I mean?
The other way around.
Hey?
Isn't it so many women, so little time?
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
So many women, so little time.
Uh-huh.
I would have to say, look, so many women, but not enough time to do all the other things I've got to do in my life. You know, I've still got to win at certain situations and succeed and expand my wealth. No, that is essential.
We're nearly coming to the end of the session
here. Right, okay.
John says, as a moral man, would Porky agree that it's important to do unto others as you would have them do unto you?
Well, if anybody screws me over, I like to get them back.
Right.
And
I don't think that's what he means.
What does he mean then? What was this again? What was he saying?
Well, the question says, as a moral man, would Porky agree that it's important to do unto others as you would have them do unto you?
Oh, I see what you mean,
that you would like people to be treating you in the way that you would treat other people.
Well, I have always treated people well.
Have you?
I've had friends whose tax bills I've paid. Uh-huh. I've had people who I've assisted greatly in their career. Mm. I've had people who I've put a good word in and eased them out of situations. No fucker that I can remember of has ever done me a favour.
Really?
Never done me a
favour.
No one's ever done me a favour. And so for that reason, I'm now getting more streetwise about it, okay? Oh, yeah. There are certain people in this world. Jack Charlton once made a terrible mistake and got fined by the FA for revealing that I've my little black book, you know, and I've got my names in a little black book.
He
says,
to try and break their legs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So if they'd fouled him in a previous game, he wrote it down in his little black book after the game. And then when Leeds were next playing Chelsea, oh, that fucking Chopper Harris, he's getting it today. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. And he was fined by the FA for holding vendettas.
Right.
Well, I can warn the world now.
Yeah.
I've got my little black book, okay? And there are a few people right at the high of that list who are going to get it mightily, right?
Okay.
Yeah, because I've had it with being Mr. Nice Guy. There'll be no more Mr. Nice Guy from Porky, okay? Watch your back if you've been detrimental to Porky during your life, because I'm on the revenge rampage trail.
Okay. Final question from Paul.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be a good BBC Question Time guest? And do you think you could avoid using the term half-bake when debating with MPs?
Well, I think most MPs are half-bakes. I met Nigel Farage the other day. I know he's not an MP, but he's a politician, you know, like a European politician. I did like him, although he's quite good. You know, he's not full of fanciful words and all that kind of stuff. I think I'd probably quite like Jacob Rees-Mogg, although I think he's a scheming, conniving individual.
Yeah, well, that's why you get on with him.
Yeah, well, exactly, probably, yeah, and he's in it for himself. I quite like Boris Johnson, but the trouble with Boris Johnson is he has contempt for anybody who has a lesser intellect than him, and not many people have a lesser intellect. The one guy I would really give it right in the face to is that wanker David Cameron, because he has basically caused the political crisis that we've been suffering in this country the last 12 months. I mean, not only should he never have called a referendum election, he actually told people in Europe, don't worry, it won't be a referendum. Yeah. Don't worry, I'm going to another election. It'll be a hung parliament again. I'll do a deal with the Lib Dems. They don't want a referendum.
Yeah.
There won't be one. So when he had to call one, he called it at the wrong time. Could have called it the fourth year of his term of premiership.
He didn't have to do it at all.
Of course he didn't have to do it at all. What would have happened to him under two? He had a majority when he did it.
Guess what his reasoning was? His reasoning was to unite the Tory party.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which has not worked out well.
Didn't work out well at all.
No.
So the answer is, if I was on Newsnight, I think I'd get bored stiff by having to speak only one in five, if you see what I mean, because you've got to...
You hate that.
I'd hate it, you've got a... Who runs Newsnight now? Fiona Bruce.
Fiona Bruce. She's done a very good job, by the way.
No, I don't either. Is there two or three on either side of her?
There's usually five panellists.
Usually five panellists, that's right. Four of them are usually very left-wing, chosen specifically by the BBC. Remainers, that kind of stuff. I've seen people like Piers Morgan on Newsnight. I wouldn't say Piers is a particularly big right-winger, but howled down because he speaks up and is man of the people. Yeah. Anybody on Newsnight who doesn't go down the Gary Lineker line of virtue signalling is shouted down by the audience, live audience, who, again, are handpicked by the BBC to give anybody who's slightly right of Marxism a hard time, you know? And sometimes when I do Jeremy Vine on Five, we have a live audience in our studio there doing that. And they're beautifully balanced and picked.
Yeah.
Half of them are shouting encouragement to me.
Yeah.
Half of them are putting me down. But it's not a BBC audience. So the answer to that is, I have very little time for most MPs and most politicians.
Okay. That was Ask Porky. We'll have another one next month. Remember, you can send your questions into our Facebook page, or you can put them on our Two Mics Twitter page as well,
indeed,
at The Two Mics. We'll have more coming up from On The Record soon.
Indeed. She's the sexiest woman I've ever met.
Really?
I said, who? He said Edwina Curry.
Really?
I said, what do you mean? I said, she's an average middle-aged woman. I said, you know, bright, obviously, went to Oxford and all that, but married to some bloke called Ray or something like that.
Uh-huh.
He said, no, something about her. He said, oh, you know, I really could have got hold of her, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Now,
sure,
perhaps I shouldn't say that.
Maybe you shouldn't. A bit late now, though. You've said
I'm sure Tim was talking metaphorically, obviously, because he's married to the lovely Wendy, you know. But anyway, so either Jolene or Vailene, whatever her name was, you know, more pissed Ross used to get, used to say, I'll never be. Never be a one in my life who can tempt me like that barmaid. And this barmaid would be gorgeous, you know, probably in her late 20s or something, you know, buxom lady all that, you know, flashing her eyes, long hair. Nah, I'll never turn away from Jolene or Vailene, whatever her name was. And then Vailene would turn up and she was, I'm not joking, 10-ton Tessie would have been her little mate, honest to God, you know what I mean? No, it's not very nice.
Very unchivalrous.
No, but don't worry, because Ross is dead.
Well, she might not be.
I think she probably will be.
She might not be.
Well, she's probably...
She's eaten herself to death.
She probably is. I haven't got a right name anyway, so it doesn't matter. And just as Rudolph Valentino once said, so little time, so many women. You know what I mean?
The other way around.
Hey?
It's so many women, so little time.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
I think so.
So many women, so little time. Huh? I can give you advice on many, many things. You know, your love life, what to drink, how to pursue your career, what you should invest in. But I can't advise you on eggs, full stop.